A bank scam, a job that wasn't what it promised to be, and a family betrayal. What happens when the very people and systems that are supposed to protect us deceive us instead? That's what we'll explore in today's Side Eye session with my special guest and coaching friend, Tina Unruh. Welcome to Nothing Felt Wrong, where we share stories about scams, deception, and manipulation, and how ordinary people get pulled into situations that feel believable until suddenly they don't. I'm Anne Genduso, and if you're fascinated by deception and human behavior, then take a seat next to me here at the Side Eye Society. Today, we'll examine three Reddit stories that remind us of an important lesson. People don't always get deceived because they're gullible. Sometimes they get deceived because they're trusting the very people and systems they've been taught to trust. Let's get started. Hi, Tina. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Happy to be here. I'm excited.
I know. This is going to be so much fun. And with your background as a life coach, I think you're going to have plenty of to say, especially when it comes to family dynamics and all that good stuff.
I am eager to hear what these stories are, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, story number one. The title is U.S. Dealing with Feelings of Shame After Being Scammed. And the source is Reddit user KaleidoscopeHot728. Last month, I fell for a scam over the phone. It was 12:30 p.m. on a busy day at work, and I was grabbing some pretzels at the vending machine for my sad desk lunch. My bank called, and the caller ID and number that flashed up on my phone both 1,000% came up as being from my real-life bank. I found out later that they spoofed the number. And they informed me a woman in Detroit was trying to hack my Zelle and send herself $2,000. They sounded so official, asking me if I had a pen, providing case numbers for reference, and walking me through the process to cancel the $2,000 transfer before it went through, then giving me a cancellation number. Little did I know, they were instructing me how to transfer them the $2,000. They were listed on Zelle as Chase Bank, as their actual account name, which I still have no idea how that was allowed to happen. I called Chase, I filed a police report, and was basically told I was SOL and that neither of them could help me. I don't quite live paycheck to paycheck, but I'm also not in the financial position to lose $2,000 without making a major impact. The hardest thing has been dealing with the relentless shame, embarrassment, and guilt. I'm highly educated. I have a job with lots of responsibility. I own my home and consider myself relatively intelligent. I'm mortified that I fell for this. I feel like I let down my husband and myself. It's been a month and I can't stop ruminating about it. I think about it multiple times per day. I just feel so incredibly stupid and naive. I feel like I'm a bad, stupid person. No matter how many times I tell myself that dwelling in the past isn't helping, I'm still overcome with shame and regret. I know I can't change anything, but my self-esteem has tanked, and I truly feel like one of the dumbest people in the world. My question is, for anyone else that has gone through this, how did you deal with the shame and humiliation? Is this common? Does it go away? Any help, advice, or a commiseration would be greatly appreciated.
My heart is like breaking, right?
It's so bad.
Okay, so can we just first of all, like, talk about how ridiculous I think that it is that there's some allowable policy where somebody could create a handle that says Chase Bank in Zelle? Like, come on.
Would you even have thought of that? Like,
no.
Like, whenever you see that and be like, oh, okay, sure.
That's like, that is sometimes what surprises me about criminals. It's like, they can be super smart.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't even think to do that. Right?
Absolutely.
And so the fact that this person feels shame for being duped when, like, I think I would have fallen for that too.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if the title were that, I would have, I think, assumed that there's no way that the Zelle policy, in essence, would allow themselves to call themselves a bank.
I know. And I did want to tell, I wanted to tell this person they're not alone too, because you're right. First of all, you were saying how you would fall. I would absolutely have fallen for that because it's an institution that you think you're supposed to trust, right? But also I wanted to throw a stat out here that last year people reported losing nearly $1 billion to business impersonators, with the highest reported losses to bank impersonators. And that's up from $866 million in 2024.
Wow.
So this is a hot scam, and I've actually gotten this call myself. I don't know if you have. Have you?
I have not. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I have not.
I have. The only reason I figured it out because they was they did not spoof the bank number. They left a voice, or they might have even, though, but they left a voicemail and left a number for me to call back because I just don't answer my calls. And I saw that, and they left their name, the bank manager and everything of the Fredericksburg branch. Yeah, like they sounded legit. And I Googled quickly the manager's name of the Fredericksburg branch and the phone number. And that's when I was like, this is a scam. And right on my bank's website was this big alert, like, there's scammers pretending to be us and all of this. So the person's not alone. Let's put it that way. They're not alone. It's very easy to get caught in this. And this is just something that's happening a lot.
Right. And can we just talk about how, I mean, these scams, I think, are becoming more and more sophisticated.
Right? Yes.
Like,
yes.
I got an email from some ridiculous scammer, but, you know, they had taken the logo and they had done all these things to the email that made it look almost legit. And so this particular post, I think you said that the phone number was actually spoofed. So it's like, it actually looks like it's coming from an actual number that this person believes is their bank. Like, and it puts so much work on us to be able to validate things, right? And so then when you feel like the sense of urgency, you know, for something, I can see how it would be harder for us to like slow down and like really start to question things.
Yeah. And I think the worst part about this, these types of scams, which again are on the rise, and there's a reason for it, because you're borrowing, it's authority bias. You're borrowing authority from people that have authority, the Chase Bank, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're borrowing that and saying, this is who I am. But the part that's so ironic and horrible is that they're saying they're the fraud detection department, right? They're calling saying somebody is fraudulently getting your money, and then they're taking your money. It's just, So as far as the feelings of shame and stupidity, no, you're right, Tina. Like, this is highly sophisticated. And this isn't just like one person doing this, like, from their computer. This is like these scammers, like this type of scamming is from a whole network. It's in big criminal enterprise.
I was about to say that. I was like, it's like on the level of an actual business.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is not just your next door neighbor deciding to, you know, do a prank, right? These are people who are likely very experienced in doing this and unfortunately probably have other people telling them how to do it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they've got scripts. They got everything. I think there are some of them, and I've seen this, they're like call centers. They have whole things set up where there's, you know, they have their scripts, they have everything they're supposed to say. And it all relies on these psychological tools where authority bias was the one of them for this one. I think, you know, there's a few other things that they're doing. I think they're also taking fear exploitation because you're afraid you're going to lose your money. And then, of course, you lose your money. But that's what they're doing. They're saying like, oh, be afraid. You need to do this now. Because if you don't do this now, you're going to lose something. And of course, people are going to be like, oh my God, I don't want to get scammed. So sure, let me just transfer this or whatever it is. So they take you, just get your social security that way. And then they're able to open up other things. So like there's lots of ways that this particular scam can work. Mm-hmm. And then the urgency is the other thing they use, right? Like, act now. Mm-hmm. So that goes hand in hand with the fear. Act now before you lose this. We don't want all your stuff to happen or, you know, to get moved out of your account. Oh. And you end up doing it anyway.
I think that part is the part that sucks the most to me is like when the rationale that is being given to you that feels like it's the compelling part, right, for the urgency, like I have to hurry up and kind of stop this thing from happening, is the very thing that they are perpetrating themselves, right? It's just like this awful, awful side of manipulation.
Yeah, it's the irony of it all.
Yes.
It's like, I can't believe that they would do something like that. And, you know, the urgency also means you don't have the opportunity, or you often feel like you don't have the opportunity to stop and double check things. And that's where, you know, you can go, even if you had that little kind of feeling that something might be off, you're like in the moment and you just want to do it. And so, I mean, that's just how we are these days. Everyone seems to be like move really, really fast.
Yeah.
But that's one thing that I think we could all do is just if we recognize these signs and hear that that's what they're preying on, like just take a beat, you know, it's okay to hang up and you can call back or you can call your bank directly or look into, you know, whatever you need to do. Real front prevention departments, first of all, if they call, you know, off, I don't know, sometimes they call you, I guess. I don't know. I usually get like alerts or things like that, you know, like from an email or a text. It's not a phone call, but maybe, I don't know. They're not going to have a problem if you want to call back. So if you ask them, hey, I need to give you a call back, they'll be like, yep, sure, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas who knows, the scammer may like try to keep you on the phone, try to keep you talking, trying to get that, press you with that urgency.
Yes. And I think that's an excellent point too, right? Is because, you know, being able to stop it from happening in that moment, you would likely be able to still stop it if you took a beat and took like 2 to 3 minutes to like confirm things, right? Like they already had however much time supposedly to call you and see that this was happening, right? So when you kind of really start to slow it down, then you can really start to inspect things a bit more and really feel like you're in control, not being like driven by the urgency of someone else.
Yeah,
that's such a good point.
That's the hardest part.
Yeah.
As for the person's shame, honestly, one thing I always say is I feel like scams are, they're evolving so quickly. They're more sophisticated. There's new technologies every day. There's AI voice cloning. There's everything, right? They're getting harder and harder to detect. So I think one thing that we as a society have always done is that we've viewed scams for something that only happened to maybe older people, for people who are less intelligent, for people who aren't critical thinkers. And that's why, unfortunately, like it's a victim shaming, right? And it's like the one area we're allowed to victim shame still. And that's why I think it really, really hurts for the victims, because either they don't feel like they're believed or they feel like people just are going to assume they're stupid. And that's part of what I want to do here by talking to you about all of this is try to say, no, this could happen to any of us. And it's getting more difficult. And I hope if this person happens to be listening to this podcast, they really take that to heart and know that it's not their fault.
Right. And you brought up something that was really important too, which is the evolution of technology, specifically AI, the fact that people's images can be used, their likeness, right? Their voices. And isn't there like, there's that scam that's been talked about for, I think, a few years where, you know, people had been threatening or stating that they have someone, a loved one, let's say, you know, kidnapped or whatever, and you need to pay money in order to release them. And I think I had heard within the past couple of years, like they actually had a voice, like an AI generated voice of that family member. So that just, that like pulls on heartstrings even more so. And then I can understand like the urgency and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's just to this person that was involved. Yes. It's not only you, like every single one of us could fall for these types of things. And it takes into account as well, like our own situation. Like what if we are like having a bad day or stressed out or something, right? Like our right. own mental kind of bandwidth, if you will, and our sense of capacity kind of contributes to this as well. So like if we're not doing well or we're already under stress for some reason, then I think like it heightens the ability for any of us to be able to fall for these types of things.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the whole thing. Underlying all manipulation is trying to play on people's emotions. Where it doesn't matter. The emotion can be a positive one too, right? Like there could be opportunity, like people are excited for something, or, you know, it doesn't always have to be negative, although we know how powerful negative ones can be. So that's why I think they do often do that too.
Yeah.
I know. My heart breaks too. I'm like, this poor person, but hopefully she can forgive herself. Like she said, it's not like it's a lot of money, but she sounds like she's in an okay place and she can just move on and now know more and maybe help somebody else so that they can avoid this in the future.
Well, and I hope that they feel like they did that by posting on Reddit.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. and giving voice to the experience, I think is really important.
Yeah, and get a community of people who can, you know, and just not sitting there suffering in silence, right? Because when you suffer in silence, then you just internalize and you can ruminate, which they said that they were doing. Let's move on to the second one. This one is entitled, How to Emotionally Recover from a Financial Scam. And it's by Reddit user mediocre_lawyer5792. I know I'm dumb to fall for this, and I'm still trying to process everything that's happened, but the guilt is hitting me like a car crash. A few weeks ago, I came across a website for work-from-home jobs, and I had been trying to look around for a more low-commitment side hustle as I was planning to quit my full-time job by this year due to the slightly toxic environment. They listed some roles like data entry, customer service, email, et cetera, left my name, contact number, and didn't think much of it. The next day, I was contacted via WhatsApp and was briefed about a different job position. I tried to search through my browsing history for the website, but couldn't find it. I went ahead to Google the company name, and all seems fine at this point. I didn't go into it straight away, but prompted for more details on the job roles and all. This is part of a crypto company, and my role is to assist customers in converting their money, and I get some commissions. So she had me sign up on a website, and I was awarded newbie funds for my first day to process orders. It was just clicking the same buttons for a minimum of 60 times a day, and at the end, ta-da, I earned $185. However, to get this fund, I needed to download a crypto app for it to be deposited there from their platform, and then it can be transferred to my bank account. At this point, I was reluctant, because I didn't want to manage so many different apps, but the app is a legit crypto app used by traders, and I can download it in Google Play. So I did, and I got my first pay. Second day, I was informed I needed to deposit $50 daily to start, and I can withdraw it later, as withdrawal is done daily. My thought at this point was, well, even without this, I'm still in a net positive. Oh boy, I got sucked in. Second day went fine. I earned $75 minus the initial deposit. The third day is when shit went down. I hit special orders that made my account go negative, so I had to deposit more to clear the order and earn extra commissions. It started with depositing $200 to earn back $400. Then it became depositing $3,000 to earn $6,000, and then $6,000 to earn $12,000. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. This one time they said that they needed to put in
$22,000. Oh no.
Yeah. So there was no time for tears. I immediately called my so-called mentor who kept coaxing me to put in this money, and it was like I was under a spell. I was convinced that yes, I need to deposit another $22,000 to earn my pay. Thankfully, my mom heard the combo, and her crying definitely snapped me back into reality. WTF was I thinking? I'm nearing my 30s, and my mom's going to be in her 70s soon. We're lucky we have a secured roof overhead and we can live comfortably, but my mom is still unable to retire. So fast forward, we went to the police station, and it was 2 hours of statement recording. I can tell that my mom was trying her best not to cry and hold it together, and this guilt has been eating me up daily. Most nights I wake up feeling worthless and have been losing some sleep over this. Except for the moment she caught me, she has never once blamed or berated me for this. And I know for sure that she's also dealing with the emotional drawback, but I'm not sure what to do to help her too. How do we both recover emotionally from this?
What a sad story. My heart is breaking for them too. I mean, okay. So I think most people definitely want work from home jobs. Yes. I know there are people who thrive in the workplace, and there are definitely tons of people looking for side gigs. And so like the work from home interest is unprecedented right now. People definitely want that flexibility, additional income, like whatever it is. So it's so understandable that she would look for those types of jobs. And the fact that, you know, she got the job and stuff didn't seem to start going sideways until day two. And you're already sucked in.
Right. Exactly. Right. They started with the carrot that they dangled, right? Like, here, we're going to give you $185 the first day. Yes. So it's like that escalation. That's what they did for these manipulations, right? They escalated. They start with, we're going to give you first, and then we're going to take. And then we're going to tell you, oh, no, you need to do more. And then they kept going until all of a sudden it's $22,000.
That's painful. Oh, my word. That's painful.
I know.
The part that struck me, I think, the most was the fact that they had what she called, I think, was a mentor. So they added like a human element into this that seems like, oh, yes, I'm here to help you. I'm here to, to be able to support you through this and help you get the most money or what have you. I just, that's like another level.
Right, because you're actually talking to a human. A lot of times, sometimes you think that, like, if you're going to be sucked into a scam, you're just dealing with someone over email or something like that. Or, I mean, and I don't know if they, like, spoke to this person over the phone. But either way, you know, having that dedicated point person, the quote-unquote mentor, a boss or whatever, again, that goes back to authority bias. You assume that that person is going to lead you in the right direction.
Yes.
And they're not. So. Yes. This also goes back to what we were talking about last time too, about like what is the emotion they're drawing on. And in this one, it was a positive one, right? Like the remote, you said it's opportunity. You want to have a remote job. You want to have a job, right? You want to have an easy job. This person's like, oh, I can do a part-time gig. I can do it at home. I can just do it on my computer. It sounds very appealing at the time. So it didn't have to be a fear or urgency. It was opportunity.
For sure. The way that I interpreted it was that each time this person talked to their mentor, it's like they continued to get sucked in, right? Mm-hmm. So it speaks to like the doubling down of those psychological like manipulation tactics, right? Like being able to be somehow engaged with this person, whether it's email, phone, video, like whatever it is, and being able to continue to convince someone to keep putting in more and more money. And the only thing that it sounds like broke her ability to be swayed by this person was her own mother crying. I was like, wow, that just speaks to like the tactics of these people and the skill set to prey on the things that people possibly want for themselves or, you know, think that they can get out of it.
Yep, absolutely. So they do that escalation. And then I think this kind of goes like the technical term of what you were just talking about was that sunk cost fallacy. Mm-hmm. So like people are like, I've already spent this much time on it. Why would I? Yeah, I can do it again. And why would I want to back out now? Even if they have little thoughts like, oh, I don't know, $6,000 putting in would be, but it worked last time. So all of that escalation and the sunk cost fallacy of I've put so much time and effort into this already. There's also a little bit of identity in here, right? Like where you start thinking you're good at your job. I'm savvy. I'm a good investor. So this won't happen to me or whatever it is. So it hits kind of the identity as well, which makes people more hesitant to stop or to question what might be going wrong.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think at any point in this process, right, that this person would want to believe that they were being swindled. Right? Because right. that speaks exactly right, to our identity. Like, wait, I fell for this. I'm, you know, right. I'm someone who got taken. So we don't want to think that about ourselves. So it's so much easier to be able to look at the external situation and just listen to it on its face. Yeah. Right. And be able to hear like, oh, yes, I hear the justification you're offering for this rationale. Yes, I'm going to put my money in, especially too, if you're now at a negative and they're telling you that the way to become yes. whole or to gain back is, you know, potentially putting more in. It's just
right. So it does go on to the fear too. Like, because once you start questioning, then you're like, but wait, I have to do this. Or if I don't, I'm not going to get, it back. Also, just wrapping it up is to making it part of your job, which you have. So there's a sense of obligation too, right? Like duty, like this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, that authority again.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it all preys. And I feel so bad because $22,000 is a lot of money. And for anyone, right? Well, maybe not for billionaires, but it's a lot of money and a life-changing amount of money for many people. And again, this going back to the guilt and shame and all of those emotions that come with this. But this is a prime example of how these are sophisticated networks, because like you said, this is not your neighbor. There is no way this is just one person just sitting in a corner deciding to do this. This is a whole enterprise that has come up with fake jobs. They've come up with a way to figure out what is the, I still want to know, this person said that they downloaded the app and it was a real app, but was it? Because sometimes they can clone those and they can make it look like they're depositing money in while they're taking, you know, just like mirror screens and things like that. I've heard of that. So like, it's tough. I would just say for the future and just in general, any job that asks you to give money in any way, shape, or form, whether it's to land the job or to, you know, have to front something, is most likely not a legitimate opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up something I think which is really important as well, which is the apps, right? Like all yeah. we have to go on is the app stores,
yeah.
right, that we trust, and maybe, you know, checking Reddit or whatever to be able to see
yeah.
in more information about the apps. But if those are starting to become less and less trustworthy, then sure. that's another level, right, of
yeah.
of fear and concern that we have for ourselves about what yeah. applications we put on our phone that then have access potentially to other apps and stuff on our phone. Like it's a whole nother yeah. level of fear people can tap into. Yeah. Oh,
sure. And I think the other little like kind of red flag that I would think about for the future for anyone who's actually looking for jobs and might come across these is if it mentions crypto. Like that usually is just a red flag.
It's a red flag for me, but
yeah. yeah. And some people may love crypto. That's great. But when it comes to job postings, they don't usually pay you through crypto platforms and ask you to put the like anything like that. That isn't direct, like a direct deposit, something that might be out of the normal, that's where your radar should start beeping.
Yes, I agree with you. Yeah. Oh, so painful.
I know. So again, this person, it's not your fault. It was very sophisticated and you're not alone. Okay, so moving on. This one's a little different. This is entitled Employee Father Committed Fraud. What should I do? And this is by Reddit user evening_formal781. 2 years ago, I was forced to start a small contracting business with my dad, who has 20 years of experience in agriculture. I never had a say in anything with the business since my dad would shrug me off and continue running it his way, even though I took the compliance courses, etc. So fast forward a few months down the road, checks were coming in from contracts he did. He would camp at my mother's house, take the checks, cash them out at who knows where, come back with cash, and deposit it into the bank. It was fishy. There was a situation last year where he stole a $30,000 check and only gave a fraction for payroll. Anyway, fast forward even more, Turns out he's under investigation by the district attorney for fraud and creating fraudulent contracts under my name, my sister's name, and using his old companies that were shut down years ago. In addition, the company owes State Funds California audit $13,000 and California's Employment Development Department taxes $2,000. Since I own 100% of the corporation, what can I do to prevent the debt from falling on me? I want to close the business formally, but cannot afford a lawyer. Any legal advice? I also moved to Illinois. Don't know how to handle this from here. I've been informed through consultant I can have the business remain open and file a lawsuit against my dad for any damages, but only drawback, I can't afford it. And then they put an edit that the corporation was formed in California and they moved to Illinois last year. Dad continued operating the business when I was gone. So first, we're going to say we're not going to give any legal advice. We know that.
Correct. Correct. I'm still like a little confused about how this person was like forced to work with their father, though, right? Like the context is missing.
The term was interesting that they started off saying that I was forced. But I think family dynamics can be so complex. And again, we talk about authority, right? Like someone who's supposed to protect you, someone who you're supposed to believe has your best interest, or at least won't harm you. There's the prevailing theory in society that maybe it just, you know, like think about when I just know like the pressures that people have, especially when they're young and we don't know this person's age, the pressures to do what the family wants, right? The family wants you to take over their business or get in business with them or whatever. So I can see that feeling of being forced, especially when we don't know all the context about like, was he living under his roof? Like, you know what I mean? There's a whole bunch of things that could go into that.
That's very true. Very true. The dynamic, though, of the son being 100% owner of the corporation just adds like another layer of pain to this because the father was clearly committing fraud. And you wonder if putting the corporation in the son's name was part of that strategy, right? To be able to
I'm not even questioning them. I'm like, yeah, that was strategic. So that anything now bad would happen, he'd be the scapegoat.
Yes. But then that's just a layer of pain that we haven't experienced with the other two stories, right? Because this is now being perpetrated by your own father.
Yep. Like it's a family obligation trap, right? You defer to authority, the family structure, the father is, you know, many times viewed as the person who makes decisions. So you just go along with them. I think the wording choice in here too shows a dynamic of learned powerlessness, right? Mm-hmm. So like after the pattern of your dad just ignoring your input for the business, then you just give up. You're like, I'm not even going to bother trying to say what to do anymore. But unfortunately, by not being on top of it, then the fraud was able to be perpetrated and you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. And can we just talk about the fact that you are talking about this and normalizing the victimhood, in essence, of how these things can take shape? I think this is like, at least for me, it's one of the more obvious ones that I think we all can appreciate potentially falling for or being victim to, right? The fact that there is somebody in our family who is somehow forcing us into business, right? And you rattled off a few different examples of that, let alone just the relationship itself.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So, you know, there could be like people pleasing, like the fact that you want to help them with whatever, I'll do this, right? Even if you think it's for a short period of time, maybe you don't intend to do it for long. I think it's so much easier to see how we could fall for this ourselves when it's someone in our own family.
Which is also what makes it so much more devastating because it is somebody, I mean, like, It's one thing if a stranger, you know, the crypto scam, right? Like you have a stranger who's doing this to you. I mean, it's awful. You lost a very large amount of money. But when it's your own family or your, you know, spouse or whatever, the person that you really believed in, and it's a long con. This wasn't something that happened overnight. Like this was something that took what sounds like years in the making. The escalation, again, of how it started with like, oh, he's going to handle the finances. Oh, he forgot payroll. You know, just like all these little things that add up. It just makes it so utterly devastating because you feel like you've misplaced that trust and you don't even know when and where it could have stopped or how you should have known in the first place.
Mm-hmm. It makes it so much more difficult to reconcile everything. Because then I can also see the length of the con being extended because of the potential rationalizations that we would make for ourselves, right? Like,
absolutely.
I mean, we talk about age. And we don't know the age of this person. We don't know the age of the father. And so I could see it at least being like, oh, he forgot payroll, you know. It just slipped his mind, right? Or like you're rationalizing and justifying the potential reasons for things happening until you are so deep in it that you can no longer continue to rationalize it. And then you're having to come to terms with what's actually being done to you by someone that you love.
Right. Then you have the state of California coming after you and you're like, you're right. Like all those little justifications that you tell yourself. Yeah. Cause there's always a million reasons. And it's funny because I'm a person that likes to proceed from charitable assumption, meaning I always want to assume the best. And until someone proves otherwise, I want to assume the best intent from that person. And that may be really helpful. In fact, it's something I've been taught in coaching and talked about with like with my team members in previous jobs and things like that. I was taught that, right? Like charitable assumption, because as soon as you, if you start like filling in the gaps with your assumptions, that can cause conflict. And so it's a big conflict management strategy. However, when you do that on a repeated basis, or in the case of scammers, people who you don't know, right? Like you don't know if this could be somebody that you're supposed to trust, your dad, your boss, whatever it is. They, you know, it's almost like you can't ignore your intuition though too, because if you do, you just start all those rationalizations and justifications, and charitable assumption can become a weapon.
Yes. And I mean, I have to say I'm with you completely, charitable, giving people the benefit of the doubt. And I have definitely done that for too long with some people and completely been burned. So what a painful thing to have to experience.
I know,
man.
So here's a question for you, Tina, and I'm sure you'll have an answer right at the tip of your tongue. How do you become a person who doesn't turn bitter and doesn't like question everything so that you can still have charitable assumption occasionally? Like, how do you walk that line?
Oh my word. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I don't know that I have anything off the tip of my tongue.
I knew, well, it's a tough one. That's why I was joking when I said that.
Of course. To me, I feel like there's a level of acceptance that we have to be able to give to situations. Clearly, when they've already happened, right? Like we can't change it. We cannot change it.
Yeah.
And all we can do is try to learn from them. And in this specific example, I think it's really hard to walk the line of not being bitter, especially when it's a family member. Like this is not a stranger. This is a family member. Like this, your whole family dynamic has to change after this.
Sure.
I can imagine. But I'm also someone who has done so much of my own work to be able to know like that bitterness is going to eat me alive inside.
Sure.
You know, and I have to allow the people who did me harm, because I even said that, you know, I've had people who have burned me in the past, their actions are a reflection of them, not me.
So wise. So wise. Yes.
Right. But there's also grief that has to just be processed through this, right? Yeah. The sense of loss, the sense of struggle that this person is navigating, just all of it. There's just a lot to carry there. And I can just see that that would be a difficult road to navigate for a while. If I had to give a short answer, it would be as best you can navigate that and carry only what is yours to carry and let the person who did you wrong own their choices and their behavior.
Yes, yes, yes. 100 times yes. And what I really love about what you just said too is that you were isolating it to this incident, meaning like, for example, this person can move forward and know that maybe you stay bitter towards your dad, if that serves you. Maybe bitterness isn't the thing. But point being is you don't let that person back in. You've learned, you do what you need to do. But isolate it to the person or the instance that actually happened here, which in this case was the father. And so that you don't necessarily go into new relationships with baggage and, or, you know, maybe viewing everybody. That's what I guess I'm getting at. Like, I don't want it to be like, I would hate it if you just view the world as everybody's out to get you and then you don't ever want to open up again. So I think that answer of just really focusing on what was within your control, what happened and how it was this particular instance, does not mean that the next instance, your mother is going to do the same thing or, you know, your future spouse or partner or whatever. If something this devastating ever did, this like earth-shattering, identity-shattering too, because again, you view like your parents as certain things and yourself as certain things. I think I would have to isolate it that way.
Yeah. We can still, I think, do ourselves justice by understanding that this is situational. Yes, right? Like this is, this does not have to keep repeating, or I don't have to see every single relationship through a lens of fear because of what I experienced, right, with my father. But we can also reflect ourselves too and understand like what boundaries might I need to put into place going forward. Like maybe I'll never be in business with a family member. Like you'll make certain boundary decisions for future situations that help you feel a bit more protected.
That's the coach side of you coming out, right? Like, you looking at the lesson and because there's always a lesson in something, even if it's a devastating lesson and a hard one to learn. Like there's something to be learned in that. And I love that thought of putting new boundaries or maybe you don't get into business with family members. Maybe it doesn't matter if somebody pushes back. I still want to be on top of things. I need to have the insight in finances, whatever it is for you. Super wise. Thank you so much, Tina. I am so glad you joined us today. Like this is, you know, I always love our conversations and the fact that we could do it together and on such an important topic. And you had such wonderful wisdom and insights. And I hope a lot of people take away those lessons.
Well, thanks for having me. I was really excited for this opportunity and in hearing the scams and all that. And I think what you're doing is super important to be able to help normalize what we all can experience as humans. So thanks for the opportunity.
All right, side-eyers, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you did, make sure to like and subscribe so you never miss a thing. Let's leave you with this week's side-eye question so you can weigh in. We know that even the smartest people can get duped. And for manipulators, it's all about finding that right vulnerability to exploit. So thinking about these three stories, which one stuck with you most? And which one made you think, I absolutely would have trusted that? Drop your answer in the comments and let's discuss. And if you're listening on a podcast app, leaving a rating or a review can help even more side-eyers find the show. And finally, if you have your own story of deception, scams, or manipulation, we want to hear them. Email us at stories@nothingfeltwrong.com. We may feature your story in a future episode, and we'll keep everything anonymous for legal protection. Because the more stories we share without shame, the more we erase the stigma associated with being a victim, and we take the power back from these awful perpetrators, because it can happen to any of us. Because nothing felt wrong until it did.